Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
The day after Memorial Day, hopefully you all had a nice and healthy and safe weekend, maybe did a little bit of barbecuing, kept things socially distanced, and we do a little roll call. We bring in Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, Dave. I did a little barbecuing yesterday. I had the brisket on all day. Took me 8 hours to get it done,
wow.
But it was perfection. So that was the icing on top of the cake from an awesome weekend. The Golden Girls Retreat was awesome, by the way. Rose and I led the Grease sing-along. That was the highlight of the weekend. But, no, I had a really good weekend. Hope you guys enjoyed your holiday weekend as well.
Rick, we turn to you and welcome you in on a lovely Tuesday morning. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, David. How are you doing? Did you enjoy your 3-day weekend?
Well, it wasn't 3-day for me, right, because I worked Saturday morning, but it was 2.5 because it started at noon on Saturday. I had a nice weekend, watched a good amount of television, went on a family hike, did some baseball stuff. Yeah, it was nice, did some outstanding eating. We did very well here.
That was my only question, because I went on CC's Instagram story, and I saw that you got the green egg out, and he's pulling out the brisket. I just wanted to know how tasty that brisket was.
Oh, bro, it was outstanding. I mean, fall apart in your mouth. Like, that's how good it was. You didn't even need a knife. Like, that's how good the brisket was.
I mean, if you're going to commit 8 hours to it, you'd imagine it's going to wind up being good.
Well, yeah, Dave, but, you know, you're hanging out outside. It's a beautiful day. You know, we had the pool. So, I mean, between jumping in and out of the pool, you check on the brisket, you spray it down with some apple cider vinegar, and you keep it pushing.
Love it. Love it. Now, we'll get into this later. Did you guys watch the Lance Armstrong documentary this weekend?
I did, yeah.
Chris, did you watch it at all?
Yeah, I got into it, Dave. I thought interesting how they tried to set it up. I know they were providing a lot of context, but they seemed like taking EPO and other doping agents was par for the course in the 90s, and I guess it felt like they pushed Lance Armstrong into getting involved with that stuff, and I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Well, the thing that I will mention it for a couple minutes here off the top. The thing that's it was interesting to me is, and I don't know what you're supposed to do. I can't believe he would take the EPO stuff after having, you know, cancer that almost killed him. But that's regardless. Is that everyone was doing this thing, and I'm not saying it makes it right, but really, I mean, Rick, in order to compete, you had to join forces and take this EPO and to cheat in order to have any chance to compete on the cycling tour.
Yeah, and I mean, even at the time, I mean, when the rumors and everything else were going around about, you know, Lance and, you know, his team doping and just the sport in general, and no one even, I mean, raise your hand if you're really paying attention to cycling before Lance Armstrong was the face of it. Not too many people were paying attention to it, right? But as soon as Lance Armstrong started winning, you know, Tour de France, you turned on OLN and you're watching the Tour de France. So, I mean, he was the face of the sport. I mean, I thought one of the most telling things, and again, I mean, this is, I guess he's not happy with how he was portrayed in this documentary. I guess he hasn't spoken to whoever directed it.
Right. But what did he think was going to happen? That it was going to be a beautiful portrayal of him?
No, I don't think it would have been. But I mean, I mean, you're going to get, who knows how much of it is true. But I mean, to your point, I mean, when he wins the world championships and then he comes back the next year and he's getting his doors blown off. And he couldn't compete. I mean,
right.
if you spent your entire life from, you know, the time he started competing in the triathlons and was doing as well as he was doing in those at 15 and 16 years old, and then he gets into the cycling and, you know, just talent-wise, just strictly talent-wise, you know, he's one of the best, and now all of a sudden you want to take that next step to the professional level, and you know deep down inside that your talent-wise should be winning races and you can't even compete. Now all of a sudden you're left with the question, do I want to, you know, make the decision to start doping, and he made the decision to start doping so he can compete and end up, I mean, winning, I mean, in what he did. But you know, I think the weird part of this whole documentary, and you were just texting me how you think, you know, part two will be better, is...
Well, I think it's going to be more salacious, part two.
Well, but if he never wins, right? Like, I mean, first of all, the fact that he's still alive is amazing. I mean, after hearing the story... And them showing the x-rays and how it metastasized in his brain and everything else. Like the fact that he was able to come back and compete and win. I mean, if he doesn't win the way that he won, like if he doesn't come back and win, he's not, I mean, Livestrong doesn't become what Livestrong became, and he doesn't raise the amount of money he raised if he didn't do it. So, I mean, he kind of puts you in a weird spot. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to condone cheating, but was it really cheating if everyone else is doing it? And because so much good came out of it, I mean, did the ends justify the means? I don't know. We'll see you'll see how I feel after this Sunday's episode.
Well, Rick, symbolism aside and the Lance Armstrong Foundation and Live Strong, setting that apart from it, I mean, this conversation is eerily similar to what we talked about with Barry Bonds in baseball, right? I mean, how Barry Bonds, talent-wise, was one of the best players the sport had ever seen. But once you started looking at the numbers and looking around and seeing what some other guys were doing, like Mark McGwire, like Sammy Sosa, I guess Barry Bonds kind of felt like he was pushed in the direction of taking PEDs and ultimately obliterating every hitting record known to the sport at that time. So I just feel like in a lot of ways, Lance Armstrong, you know, he recognized how talented he was early on. You saw in the triathlon when he was 15 years old, after the first two events, he's leading professional triathletes. Like you recognize how special this kid is and the A-type personality he had, and that it was going to absolutely set himself up to be dominant in sports. But then once you started seeing him try to make that push into the professional ranks, you recognize that there were other athletes that were catching up in cycling and he didn't know what was going on. And then I guess once he had the meeting with Michelle Ferrari, that kind of solidified the direction that he was going to go with things. I don't think it was right, but I can understand the mentality from the athlete's perspective, just why you would do that. Because if you believe that you're better and you're not getting those results, then you're willing to do whatever it takes to put yourself where you think you should be.
Is there any better name, by the way? I mean, any better name for a coach of a cycling team that's based around speed is Dr. Ferrari?
Dr. Ferrari. That's what happens with Dr. Ferrari stays with Dr. Ferrari. He's like the Vegas of doctors, it sounded like. Nobody finds out. That's personal between me and Dr. Ferrari. But the thing I'll say, Chris, because you mentioned Barry Bonds, but this seems to be the difference for me, and tell me if you guys agree. Bonds was great. Like, Bonds was an all-star player. Bonds was a terrific player. It sounds like unless you use these performance-enhancing drugs and this, you know, EPO, which they were using in cycling, you didn't have a chance to compete. Like, you were, you know, finishing 35th or just on the outside looking in. I think that it feels like to me, and maybe I'm wrong, that it was more relevant, more important to take it in cycling than even in baseball or football or any other sport.
It might well have been, Dave. I'm just using the comparison from the standpoint that cheating was rampant in the sport.
Yes.
Like, they had to establish the World Anti-Doping Agency because of what was going on in cycling. That's how bad it had gotten. I mean, you heard about the Spanish club Festina, that they ended up busting and they caught them because those guys are passing around lunch bags with EPO in them. Like, that's just that's how far gone the sport was. It feels a lot like how far gone baseball was in the 2000s. And you recognize that something had to be done and something was done. And at the center of this, you have this iconic figure that had dominated the sport on a level that we had never seen. I guess that's where I'm drawing the parallels between what happened with Lance Armstrong and Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I would imagine too. And it's not, I mean, for all the people that will call in and we're dealing with, you know, the steroid era and everything else, and I would never do that. It's not that easy. I mean, you may want to think that you'd never make that decision, but if all of a sudden, I mean, it's already, you know, the culture of your sport, and, you know, you realize that in order for me to get to the level that I should be at because I'm that talented, then I'm going to have to make this decision. And if your sport's not going to clean it up, what's your choice? Either I'm going to continue to just be a nobody and never win because I want to do this the right way.
Right.
Or, you know, I get the best out of my natural God-given ability and I start doing what everyone else is doing to even the playing field a little bit.
It didn't feel to me like part one, he was an evil villain. Like, you know, he started the whole thing, although it was great the way they started with, you know, the Uber driver just, you know, cursing at him and screaming at him and you're a cheater and bleep you. But I didn't watch part one and think, oh my God, this guy is the devil, which I have a feeling you're gonna feel more in part two. Cause this is a guy, I mean, the cheating aside, right? This is a guy that sued people that he knew were telling the truth and he was lying. Like, that's awful stuff. And that's what we're gonna find out, you know, moving forward this coming Sunday in part two.
Yeah, but at that point, Dave, what do you do?
Yeah.
But at that point, what do you do? I mean, you're backed into a corner. Everything that you've worked for now is in jeopardy. I mean, what, just, you bite the bullet and say, you know what? Yeah, I was taking EPO. And then what?
I don't know what the right answer is, but to sue people that you know are telling the truth and you're lying, I mean, that you're a bad guy.
A-Rod did it. Everyone loves A-Rod. Yeah, but now everyone loves A-Rod. I mean, I think it's easier to sit in front of a microphone not having gone through it and just say he's a bad guy. If you're in the exact same situation where, in your mind, and the one thing I took away from part one, he still doesn't think it was cheating. It's not cheating if everyone else is doing it. It's just leveling the playing field, right? So if he doesn't think he was in the wrong, I mean, now all of a sudden, because people are going to choose to be outraged because, you know, you pull back the curtain and, you know, he's not just this unbelievable specimen of an athlete that beat cancer and just can win Tour de France. He needs some help with EPO and some doping. Is that now what? So now everything that he worked for his entire life is in jeopardy. His back is against the wall. You're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If he just sucks it up and says, you know what, you guys caught me red-handed, I did it, and can't explain the context of what was going on, like how everyone was doing it. Even now, knowing that everyone was doing it and having the professional cyclist telling you know, EPO gives you, you know, 10% more a production or 10% more of whatever, you know, and then the difference between first and last in the Tour de France is 2%. Is 2 hours in a 100-hour race, so that's 2%.
Right.
You're not going to take the EPO and try to actually win the thing? What's the sense of doing it then?
No, of course you are, Rick. And what people don't understand is that this is these guys' life work. Like they've been training, building toward this their entire lives. And if you've got that much invested in something, you want to have the payoff. You don't want to invest that much work just to come up short. And so if the difference in you having success or failure is this drug, then you're probably going to take the drug, because if you don't, then everything that you sacrificed leading up to that point was for naught. And so I think that's what makes it a difficult decision. But that's not why I think Lance Armstrong is a bad guy, though. I mean, certainly he didn't handle things the way that he probably should have, and he should have came clean a lot sooner than he did. But I can understand the pressure around that. I thought he was a bad guy from episode one, when you realize that he was living in a separate lake house on Lake Cuomo and the rest of the members of his original cycling team, four guys were staying in a three-bedroom apartment. That's what made me think Lance Armstrong is a bad guy, not the doping.
He could get away with it. I mean, he was the star. He knew he was the star.
Sound like a team player.
Well, I don't think he was.
No, but that's my whole point, though, Dave. It just seems like he separated himself from the rest of the guys that were working to prop him up. And to me, that's not what a leader does.
Yeah, but you say that. I mean, I'm sure Michael Jordan's the same way. I mean, you think Michael Jordan, I mean, in that same situation, I mean, was going to have numerous teammates at his place, or was it going to be his couple security guards and his, you know, trainer, his group of, you know, that he surrounded himself with?
No, I get it, Rick. I get it. But
I think personalities are different, we had conversations
about Jordan. It wasn't about whether or not Jordan was a good guy. It was whether or not Jordan was the greatest of all time. I don't think Michael Jordan's a good guy.
I just think some guys like that, like those kind of athletes, and there's just people, I mean, they're just uber successful people, are just wired like that.
Yeah. They're driven differently.
I think they're just they're naturally selfish human beings that are focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's
their own success. Yeah. And that is to win, and that's to drive themselves as much as they can and win at whatever cost, which you've seen, which we saw. I mean, you know, back to back weeks, we saw it the last 5 weeks with Michael. We saw it this past Sunday with Lance. We'll see it again with Lance. And then we're going to see it with Maguire and Sosa as well. Guys, is that the price? Absolutely, anything to win.
I mean, once we get through all these documentaries, right? And, you know, we watch the Lance one, you'll have the Bruce Lee one, and then you'll have Maguire, Sosa. I was wondering where all the disinfectant wipes go. I think Sosa's got them all. keep his face like that. But is that going to be the big takeaway when we start talking about the greatest in their sports, like the most dominant athletes in their sports, is there's a price you have to pay? And I think there is a price you have to pay along the way?
I think there is a price you have to, absolutely.
And are you willing to do that? Like, are you willing to compromise, you know, what kind of guy you are, what kind of teammate you are, to get to a certain level? Because it feels like, I mean, Jordan did it, and now, I mean, you're kind of watching Lance do it.
But I think the question is, do you have to? Because LeBron James didn't, and LeBron James is going out of his way to try to mentor younger players, guys that aren't even his teammates, because he believes that's a part of his legacy to the sport. And so I guess that becomes the question, is like, was that mentality that Jordan, that Lance Armstrong, that Tiger Woods had, is that something that's necessary in order to to get to the mountaintop of your respective sport? Because Lance Armstrong talked about it last night. He was like, you know, these would have been my peers had I not got caught up in that cheating scandal. It would have been LeBron James. It would have been Tiger Woods. It would have been Tom Brady. That's how big he was as an entity. And it's just like, well, did he have to have that mentality in order to climb that mountain? Was it necessary?
I think the other thing, though, too, is, I mean, LeBron James is smart enough, too. I mean, and Chris, we talk about this ad nauseum with today's athlete. It's also adapting, right? Mm-hmm. Like knowing what you need to do to get the best out of your teammates. Like Jordan could push guys. Jordan could press those buttons and his guys would respond. I don't necessarily know if LeBron James, you know, was doing the same things Jordan was doing. I mean, Kyrie couldn't handle it. He wanted out. Like, I mean, could you imagine you start leading the way Jordan led with some of these players now? You may have a lot of, you know, I don't a majority think of them just shut down on you.
With social media the way it is, I don't think you could lead like that anymore.
Look at guys quitting the Patriots. Reggie Wayne trying to play for the Patriots. This ain't fun. I'm out.
No. Look at who's the offensive lineman in Philadelphia. Say, well, at least we're having fun here. I mean, they've won.
Are you talking about Lane Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They won how many Super Bowls? That's fun. For Bill Belichick, for Tom Brady, for a lot of guys, that's fun. Winning is fun.
Yeah, playing in 9 Super Bowls over the course of 2 decades. Yeah, that seems like it's fun. I mean, you play to win the game. That's what Herm Edwards said. And more often than not, the Patriots are going to beat in the Super Bowl. Every other year, they're making the Super Bowl. How is that not fun?
But I've seen a lot of guys come out and say it wasn't.
Well, I mean, listen, you could have a guy come out and say it wasn't fun, but the reality is that when you look back at your playing career, you know, and what it all meant, and the moments that stand out to you, I mean, if you had a chance to compete at the highest level of the sport and win a championship, that has to be one of the things that you'll cherish for the rest of your life. So how is that not fun? Having that Super Bowl run is a story that I love telling over and over and over again, Dave. Like that is something that will never get old for the rest of my life. I don't understand how somebody could look at it and say, well, I don't want to do that every single year. I don't want to put in the work that it takes in order to compete for a championship every single year because it's too hard. To me, if you're an athlete, that means you love competition, especially if you're in the professional level. So I don't understand why you wouldn't want to sign up and play for an organization that has had that kind of success. I don't understand athletes' mindsets that don't want to do everything it takes to compete at the highest level. That's why I don't like when you throw out Kyrie Irving when we're having the conversation about whether or not an all-time great would be able to play alongside him. I mean, that it shouldn't be a question about whether or not somebody would want to play alongside Michael Jordan. It shouldn't be a question of whether or not you want to play alongside LeBron James. Like, those are great players. I don't understand any athlete's mentality that doesn't want to be surrounded by greatness.
Yeah, because I think sometimes in the moment you don't even realize. I mean, I think sometimes in the moment it just feels like it's too hard. You're not having any fun, not realizing that the reason why it is the way it is because, you know, whoever it is, the leader, your teammate or the coach is trying to get the best out of you. And who knows if you would ever reach those, you know, whoever knows if you would have reached that ceiling or those, you know, your potential if you weren't being pushed that hard. You don't even know. But in the moment, it feels like, oh, this sucks.
How many times in normal life, do you have a situation and you say to yourself continuously, God, you know, if this would change, things would be so much better. And then things change and you're in a new situation. You're like, this is not better at all. This is actually worse than the original situation I was in. That happens all the time.
All the time. The grass isn't always greener. But I mean, that in the moment, though, what I'm saying is in the moment, you think somewhere else is better.
Sure.
Or, you know, they look like they're having more fun over there. Well, they may be having more fun, but that doesn't equate to the same kind of success that you were having.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make the decision. What do I like better, winning or a loose environment where I can just have fun? I'll take the winning.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway from watching the documentary, The Last Dance, right? And Michael Jordan pointed it out. There's a price that comes along with winning. I mean, and you have to be willing to pay that price. I mean, there was a quote that was put out there that says, success is not owned, it's leased, and rent is due every day. So, I mean, somebody should give Noah Syndergaard that memo, by the way. But anyway, I just look at it from the standpoint of you have to be willing to pay the price. And that's what separates the great athletes from the good athletes. They're willing to pay the price. They're willing to pay the cost. And with this Lance Armstrong doc, you see that, you know, paying that cost included, you know, taking the EPO and jeopardizing your long-term health. But that was something that he was willing to do.
Yeah, there are only certain, I mean, there are only a certain amount of people that are willing to sacrifice what it takes. I mean, even, you know, listening to a lot of the conversations about Tom Brady or Bill Belichick. I mean, Tom Brady's going to be 43 years old. He's won 6 championships. Like, why would they? How many times have you heard someone say, well, why keep doing it? Why would you still keep playing? Well, because he, for him.
He's wired differently.
Exactly right. Like, he still has more to prove. Bill Belichick still feels like he has more to prove. Not everyone's like that, man. I mean, that's.
No, I think very few are, actually. I think more are not wired like that than are.
But I think that's why someone like Michael Jordan or someone like Bill Belichick or Tom Brady, or I think Lance Armstrong to a certain degree trying to push his teammates, realizes that these guys aren't like me. I'm not going to get complacent. I'm going to wake up every morning, be the same guy because I still have more to prove, as opposed to, you know, your role players that are just happy with the success that they've already had. You know what I mean? So if I don't keep pushing them, then they'll get complacent. And then that's going to affect our team having success.
Yep. 800-919-3776. Go ahead.
But that's how you, I mean, that's again how you ruin a lot of relationships though. Cause those guys that you're pushing can't really relate to who you are. Like, why are you so hard on me all the time? Because I have to be. It's like, why is your dad hard on you all the time? Well, cause he feels like he has to be. Cause he's trying to, you know, teach you great habits. But at the time, how many times have you MF'd your dad for punishing you or making you do something?
I think we all have, right?
All the time. Until all of a sudden you become an adult and you realize, there was a method
to that.
Yeah,
it was all within my best interest, right?
Rick, it feels like it's the difference in the mentality between I'd like to win versus I can't lose. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels
exactly
like the
right.
Great players have that mentality. Like, I can't lose. No matter what, I can't lose. And I'm willing to work as hard as it takes. And I will drag you along with me kicking and screaming if it has to be that way in order for us to accomplish our goal. Versus when you have role players or good, not great players. Yeah, I'd like to win, but I don't necessarily have to win. I'm happy being where I'm at. I guess there's a difference in the mentality. There are some athletes that are content, and there are some guys that are constantly striving for excellence. And once they achieve a certain goal, they set another goal, and they set another goal. Like, a lot of these guys are process-oriented, and they set small goals along the way so they can accomplish their big goals. Well, with a lot of athletes, they're not that way. A lot of athletes don't have that plan on how they're going to attack every day or how they're going to attack every season, every obstacle, every challenge. And watching Lance Armstrong, it just felt like he was building toward this and he had a plan. And then once he saw that, you know, the cheating and the doping was so widespread in cycling, he had to adjust his plan because he needed to figure out a way to get back to where he thought like he belonged.
How broken is that sport, by the way? The sport is so broken that unless you cheat, you have no chance to compete at a high level.
At the time it wasn't cheating. I mean, at the time it was like, I mean, so that's like saying now that, you know, stimulants and, you know, taking Sudafed or Greenies is cheating. Well, now it's cheating because it's against the rules. But when everyone was doing it, wasn't cheating. When there was the fishbowl of Greenies sitting inside of a clubhouse,
right,
that you take a handful of. You know what I mean? Like, if that's the sport, like, if when you get into the sport, that's just what's deemed acceptable, then, I mean, of course you don't feel like it's taboo because no one's getting punished for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to do it. And then all of a sudden, now because, I mean, and what was amazing to me too is they have, the sport almost goes under, right? You know, you have.
Just the year prior to him winning, yeah.
Exactly right. And then you would expect because they cleaned up the sport that times would be slower and it was the fastest tour ever.
Right.
Like they just spit in the face of the whole drug testing.
Well, his
thing.
Image was so great. I mean, it's the Hollywood story, right?
But that's why they protected him. Because the sport was irrelevant. In the United States, that sport for the most part
irrelevant.
Was irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
Until he
and they
burst
even said
the
when
scene.
He was coming to prominence, people didn't even know who he was.
And then he transcended sports, period. Because of what he fought
for,
what he accomplished.
Because of the story. Because
exactly,
I mean,
you're
on death's door. Literally, you're on death's door. The doctor says, we do not expect you to live. And now you go win the most grueling sporting event in the world within a year. I mean, that's what Hollywood stories are made of.
And that part to me, Dave, drugs or no, is still impressive.
Well, it is impressive.
Like to have the mental fortitude to be able to survive testicular cancer and battle through what he battled through. You know, you heard the doctors talking last night. They didn't give him much of a chance of being able to survive, let alone be able to get back to a high level of cycling. And the fact that he stayed the course and he was able to put his mind in a place where he could work past it and how he looked at it as a game, you know, and him fighting cancer and looking at the scoreboard and, you know, saying the scoreboard was whether the tumors were going down or not. Like, just to
right.
fix your mind in order to move past something that's literally threatening your life. That's impressive.
But I think that's to Rick's point, where he's just, you know, wired differently. And that's a guy that's wired differently, that everything is a competition, that even, you know, life or death, cancer, testicular cancer, which metastasize into your brain and your, you know, chest and all over the place, it becomes a game.
Yeah, but here's, you know what, and again, let's wait till we see what happens this upcoming Sunday with the second part of this documentary. I just get frustrated sometimes, and I get it. You know, you don't want to be seen as a bad guy, but I mean, between, you know, what Barry Bonds accomplished and who knows what percentage of Major League Baseball players, you know, took steroids or human growth or didn't, or, you know, what Roger Clemens was taking, although he still says he didn't take anything. If someone thinks, if you're being accused of doing something, knowing full well that you did it, what are your options? Do I admit it so people like me and then everything I have achieved now means nothing? Or do I just put my back up and try to fight this thing, knowing that you might hate me at the end of this, but maybe, just maybe, I can lie to the point where people start to believe me and don't think that I did it? Because, I mean, what is Barry Bonds in even the Hall of Fame? One of the best baseball players of all time. Alex Rodriguez, one of the best baseball players of all time.
Right.
Everything they accomplished, everything they worked for their entire lives is meaningless now, as far as people are concerned. So what are your choices? Don't fight it. Don't lie.
Yeah, people
like me better.
You're backed into a corner and you come out swinging, or you tell the truth.
I think people's natural default position is going to be defensive. Like, if you've worked your entire life to achieve a certain goal, and then once you do, you have accusations of you using some type of performance enhancing drug in order to accomplish it, you're going to try to defend everything you've worked toward, even if you were guilty of what people were accusing you of. So, I mean, I can understand the natural reaction that Lance Armstrong would have when all those rumors start getting floated out there, and he took it as far as to try to sue people that were making those accusations. I mean, that's probably a bridge too far, but I understand the mentality of trying to protect his legacy to the sport.
I just don't understand what the payoff would be. I get it. I mean, the right thing to do would be, especially if you knew you cheated or people thought you cheated and you did, is to admit it. But at the end of the day, well, what's the payoff of admitting it? Like, you get caught cheating on your girlfriend or your wife. I mean, okay, right thing would be to admit it. But what is admitting it to?
Well, she's probably still going to break.
But she's probably still going to break up. But she's still going to break up with you.
Yep.
Or even worse, she stays with you and never trusts you for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Which is probably worse. I mean, it's not great options.
Well, the only benefit I could see for Lance coming clean is if he was coming clean in order to clean up the sport. Like, if he's saying, like, this is what's going on, this is the pressure I felt, this is why I made the wrong decision in this moment, and I want to help clean the sport up so future cyclists don't have to worry about making this kind of choice. That's the only way he could spin something like that into a win. But that's not what he decided to do. And I think that's why some people will continue to demonize him for not only what he did on the bike, but what he tried to stand for with the Live Strong, Lance Armstrong Foundation. Like, I think that's where he opens the door to all of the criticism.
Yeah, but so much good came out of it, man. With the amount of money that they raised. I mean, I'll never forget too. Remember towards the end of Stuart Scott's life, he still pointed out the fact that he was going to still wear his Livestrong bracelet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a power. I mean, he inspired a lot of people, man. And again, you can think what you want of Lance Armstrong, the guy, but I mean, if he doesn't come back and achieve what he achieves after beating cancer, they're not raising the amount of money. Like,
no.
It doesn't, Livestrong never becomes what Livestrong became.
You know what's interesting, and you brought up Stuart Scott? I don't remember wristlets before Livestrong. Those bracelets that people wore on, I don't remember those being a thing before Lance Armstrong and Livestrong.
And then everyone had them.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody had them. They came from everywhere, sports teams, and people had mottos, whatever it was. But I don't remember the actual wristlets being a thing until Lance Armstrong came along with Livestrong.
Yeah,
that's how big was.
Was Livestrong first, or was the WWJ? I forget which ones came first.
WWJD.
Yeah, it might have been Livestrong came first.
Yeah, I don't remember before Livestrong. I would want to say that WWJD came after that.
We all had them. I mean, I still have
everyone
a pair of
it was
the
cool
shorts,
to wear
strong shorts. Well, because it was, I mean, it stood for something.
And everyone could get on board with it, right?
Well, yeah, because, it, I mean, it was no matter, you know, what you were dealing with, like, no matter what was going on in your life, like, you could get through it. There were obstacles. Everyone goes through obstacles. But, I mean, if you could fight through it. You could come out on the other end and be successful the way Lance Armstrong was. It was powerful stuff at the time, man.
It was.
They raised a ton
of money. He's an interesting guy. This is not just a black and white show. There's a lot of layers to this. I think we'll find out more next Sunday at 9 o'clock. We want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Just click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. We continue with the Lance Armstrong conversation. Let's morph into a little bit of the golf this weekend. Were you guys fully engaged, I guess we could say? Chris, were you fully engaged in the golf this weekend?
I wouldn't say I was fully engaged, Dave. I had it on. I mean, it was more background noise. You know, my family and I were just kind of hanging out on Sunday and just spending time. And you know, after a couple of months of not being able to be around anybody else, it was cool to just hang out and catch up. We had the golf on, and I got to say, I thought it was a win in terms of being able to provide some entertainment in the way of live sports and to see Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. I thought Tom Brady was probably the most interesting of all four guys because he was so bad early on, and then you see him pull a rabbit out of his hat by being able to hit that wedge shot and hold it from about 150 yards out. So, I mean, that was probably the highlight of the event for me. But, I mean, it was just, you know, being able to have live sports and see athletes' names, you know, going back and forth in a friendly competition on the golf course. To me, that was cool.
Not a great day for Under Armour Golf, too, by the way, with his pants.
Yeah, his pants. Right down the middle, huh?
I think he actually came out and said next time he's going to wear his Under Armour Golf pants. Which, come on, I mean, he's an Under Armour athlete. He's got Under Armour. Let's not pretend like he wasn't wearing Under Armour golf pants. Come on, stop. It's amazing, though, isn't it? Just how badly people couldn't wait to pile on Tom Brady once he started to struggle the way he was struggling.
People are the worst.
The worst. Just tweet after tweet.
Yeah,
he got
destroyed.
It was crazy. That's the scary part, though, Dave. That's not your sport. It's windy. It's raining.
It's an exhibition. If you've ever... It's not your sport. You're doing it to raise money for charity, and you still get destroyed on social media.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, too, that medalist that they were playing at, that's Tiger's home course. Like, when you stand on the tee, like, it's tough to really tell when you're watching it on TV, but, like, when you stand on the tee, how intimidating the tee shots are. It's like one of those courses where it looks like you get tons of trouble on the left and the right. But then, like, as you get out to where your ball, like, if you hit a good tee shot, you can kind of see that it opens up a little bit. But when you're standing on the tee, it's like, oh, no. I got trouble to the left. I got trouble to the right. And then all of a sudden, you lose it. And you start, I mean, he was slicing the hell out of it. And then he couldn't figure it out. And he started to hit it to the left. I mean, and it's rainy and windy. Forget it. It's a nightmare.
Miserable weather conditions.
Nightmare.
Miserable. So were you all in? Did you love it?
I did love it, yeah. I actually like not having people at the event, to be honest.
Mm.
Because I like the fact that you could hear, Phil, like, explain what he was thinking, you know, during his chip shot, or you could hear the conversation back and forth. I liked it. I did.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept that golf should explore. Like, if you're trying to make your sport more popular and appeal to a younger fan base, I think one of the things that you can do is actually have the guys mic'd up. Like you have in, you know, baseball has been experimenting with it around the All-Star game. You see it in football. Like, I think giving the fans at home the behind-the-scenes conversations that happen, like the golfer explaining why he's taking a particular club or taking a particular shot, or the caddy kind of outlining what they're thinking about in terms of their overall strategy on a particular hole. Like, those are the types of things that I think a lot of fans would be interested in seeing. People even that are casual sports fans and people that are not necessarily golf fans would be intrigued by hearing guys like Tiger and Phil and Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy talk about the different things that they're experiencing throughout their round.
Well, this is your time. I mean, in any sport, anywhere you pick it back up, this is your time. Because, I mean, I guess people are going to, you know, beat you up for some stuff that they don't like, but this is your time because for the most part, the masses are going to be like, you know what? I want it back so desperately that if there's a change in here, which makes it a little different or there's a different dynamic, I'm going to get on board with it because at least it's back. This is your time in any sport to experiment with these things.
Yeah, but again, let's not forget. I mean, as much as we liked it too, I mean, and Tom Brady hit that unbelievable shot where he ends up jarring it for birdie from the fairway. I mean, his, you know, his mic pack falls off. Like, and this is not something that players are going to be, especially when it means something, like you're playing a legitimate tournament, that are going to want to be mic'd up. I mean, you could do something where you had, you know,
maybe
a person following
the boom mic there that you can pick up what they're saying. Like,
but they do that.
You can do, yeah.
They do that. But again, I mean, now all of a sudden, I mean, you have the delay and everything else, but you have with people in the crowd yelling some stuff or you have the players swearing. I mean, it ain't as easy as they made it look on Sunday. There are a lot more, especially when there's crowds of people. Not as easy.
All right. 800-919-3777.
That's it? That's all you had for it? That's all you had for it? You weren't, I don't feel like you were that dialed in.
No,
he wasn't at all.
I was very dialed in. I was very dialed in.
I feel like
in.
You just brought it up because, you know, I liked it.
No. Listen, for me, here's the thing. It was fine. I need, and I've realized this with myself, I need like the competition. I need real games. I need things that really matter. And yeah, this is fine to have on background noise, like Chris said, it's fine, but I need things that really impact sports. And I haven't had that in a very long time. I know a lot of people love it, rewatching old games. It doesn't work for me. I need not knowing the result. I need something that's brand new. I don't need exhibition golf. I need real sports. So, yeah, it's fine. I checked it out. I thought Peyton Manning was really, really funny. I think he's a clever, interesting guy, and I thought it was entertaining. But does it move the needle for me? No, not really. I need honest to goodness sports.
It sounds like we're getting closer and closer to having that, though, Dave.
It does.
I mean, the NHL has a format that they feel good about. I mean, the NBA, you got 22 of the 30 teams having their facilities open, including the Nets. So, I mean, it sounds like we're inching closer and closer to having live team sports back.
Well, that's terrific because I think that's what we really need. You know,
I don't know if you can handle it, though.
In. What?
I'm not sure you can handle it. I mean, you just say, I feel like if we were in the same studio, you're talking about live sports with not knowing, like you'd be scratching your neck like you're having withdrawals right now. I don't know if you can handle if all three sports come back in July. You may be on overload. You may be tilted.
Okay, let's find out. Put me to the test. Let's see if I'm capable of enduring three sports at the same time. It's going to be
crazy. Not only three sports, you have two of them in the playoffs.
Oh, it's going to be crazy. With the amount of potential sports that we could have starting in July, August, I mean, we're talking about, you know, major tennis championships and the Kentucky Derby and the NFL and college football. I mean, you could potentially, and I don't know that they all happen at the same time, you could have everything in September. September is going to be one of the great sports months in the history of sports.
You know what I'm looking forward to, Dave? Not having that lull in the summer of about 4 or 5 weeks when it's only baseball. When you have other sports, you'll have other sports going on. You'll have basketball going on. You'll have hockey going on. Like, usually it's just baseball. After the NBA Finals, you're talking about just having baseball for about a month, and there's nothing really else to look forward to. I like baseball, but I need something to change it up every now and again, and to have those other sports be playing as well. I mean, this is going to be awesome, Dave. It really is.
Yeah, if and when we get back, it could come back in full force. All right, let's get to some of the calls. People lined up, want to talk, 800-919-3776. Let's go to Calvin in, I don't know, Washington somewhere. Calvin, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, I'm from Washington Heights, Calvin. How you doing, guys?
What's up, Calvin?
Good.
How
afternoon.
Doing?
I actually do the radio with another radio show, but in a Spanish radio show, and I just wanted to participate and say, y'all were hit it right in the spot, you know, with Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez and like Manny Ramirez. These guys have now had to pay the consequences. And for example, Barry A-Rod, he saw Barry Bonds, the numbers he was putting. He was being compared. He was, you know, people were projecting 800 home runs at one point from him. And, you know, he said, okay, this guy's doing this. I have to take this in order to, you know, stay on top. Probably Manny Ramirez felt the same. He's like, damn, I'm one of the greatest hitters all the time, but these guys is using it. Let me do what I have to do in order to maintain the game. Well, something I want to say with steroids is steroids got nothing to do with defense, guys. I feel like people forget, like, you know, yes, it helps you recover an injury. Yes, it helps you bat better and gives you more power. But it has nothing to do with defense. Barry Bonds had great defense, and Mr. Alex Rodriguez had two gold gloves in shortstop before A-Rod earned his, before Derek Jeter earned his first gold glove. So what defense has, what steroids has to do with defense? So these guys were great regardless, and they belong in the Hall of Fame. That's something I really want to say to every listener. Hello?
Yeah, no, we're here and listening for you. Yeah, there's a different factions of people. A lot of people want them in the Hall of Fame. A lot of people look at them, Rick, and see what they did and say they want them going nowhere near the Hall of Fame. I don't think they ever get in the Hall. I don't think Clemens, I don't think Bonds, I don't think A-Rod, I don't think Pete Rose, I don't think these guys ever wind up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, at this rate, it doesn't feel like it, does it? I mean, everything that they accomplished, and I mean, again, the argument, you know, Barry Bonds, whenever you decide, like you felt Barry Bonds started taking PEDs, was he a Hall of Famer before that? Was Roger Clemens a Hall of Famer before that? I mean, you may love him, you may hate him, but as far as some of the greatest baseball players ever walked the face of the earth, A-Rod's one of them, Barry Bonds is one of them, and Roger Clemens is one of them.
And they should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame, too. And I know that they cheated, they took PEDs, but baseball was complicit in all of that. They're the ones that turned a blind eye when they should have had the rules in place and had the testing in place to eliminate those PEDs out of the game, and they didn't. And they didn't do it because they benefited from it. The home run chase that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa had. Baseball benefited from all of those things. And yet we're going to ostracize or demonize the guys that took the actual PEDs, and we're going to keep them out of the Hall of Fame? Like, to me, that just, that doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair. Where clearly those guys were some of the best baseball players of that generation.
At least in the Hall where it says their accomplishments and says the negative things they did as well. Just to have
you tell the whole story, Dave.
Yeah,
I don't think you pick and choose what you put in. You tell the entire story, but you put them in the Hall of Fame because that's where they belong.
Yeah, tell the story, right? Say that Barry Bonds had 70 home runs.
But Dave, I mean, for you to say, I mean, there's a lot of people that feel the same way that you and Chris do, and I guess to a certain degree I do, because they still have, I mean, there still are artifacts or whatever you want to say from, you know, Bonds and A-Rod and Clemens in the Hall of Fame. It's just that people want to pretend, or not pretend, that's how they believe, that they're protecting the sanctity of the Hall of Fame and that it's an honor to be in the Hall of Fame. It's not just the museum that tells the story. They know it is, and they don't feel like that they deserve, those guys deserve the honor of being a Hall of Famer because they cheated. When in actuality, we don't know how many people were doing it at the time, which bothers me. And what else bothers me and pisses me off is that, I mean, between Barry Bonds' head growing before, I mean, sizes before spring training, the amount of home runs he's hitting, I mean, Lance Armstrong fighting through brain cancer / lung cancer / getting his testicle removed because he had testicular cancer, to all of a sudden just battle through and, you know, ride the fastest Tour de France. Like, that doesn't raise an eyebrow to the people. But no, because it's in their benefit, because Lance Armstrong is doing the impossible, raising all this money, and, you know, he's reinvigorated the sport.
And it's got to be good.
So they're going to turn a blind
eye. It's got to be.
Well, so they're going to turn a blind eye until they get, you know, there's, you know, pressure to change it. Well, why didn't you change it when you had the opportunity, when you realized it was going on, as opposed to just keep ignoring it till now I'm the one that gets stuck with all this backlash?
Let's go to Kieran in Freeport. Kieran, you're next up on 98.7, buddy.
Hey, guys. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I just wanted to give you guys major props. So a little background on myself. So I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Ukraine, and I served there from 2018 to 2020. And part of what we do there, you know, they teach us a lot about resiliency and, you know, bouncing back. And one of my biggest coping mechanisms was reading so much about my sports teams. And a huge part of that was listening to your guys' podcast uploads. And I just want to say you guys are amazing. And also how toxic it was to follow the Knicks, Nets, and Giants while I was over there. But, yeah, thank you guys so much. You guys are amazing.
thank you very much, Kieran. We appreciate the call and the fact that I never realized we had such a following in the Ukraine, Rick, but apparently we're big over there.
Yeah, big in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Worldwide, Dave. This is like we're just touching all sorts of people all over the planet. Love it.
Poor guy. I mean, he's on a mission over in Ukraine. He's got to be a Giants, Mets, and Knicks fan.
Now, the biggest question is, do they know us as DCR or do they know us as Humpty Canty and Rothenberg?
Yeah, I don't know. He'll have to call back and tell us. Because okay. DCR feels like it's newer, right?
Yeah, DCR is a new thing. We're going through a little bit of a rebranding.
Yeah. Humpty can't derothem. I almost feel like there's a shift away from Humpty.
There is. There's been a shift away from Humpty, yes.
Right.
So I would agree with that.
I've been told DiPietro.
I'm not on board for that, by the way.
You don't sign off on that?
No.
I'm told DiPietro is the name, his name.
Well, it is. I mean,
I've known it. It's my last name. Yeah, I never thought Humpty. Name was Humpty. I was never confused walking into work one day and someone said, by the way, his name is not actually Humpty. I know it wasn't Humpty.
Humpty's my given name. I just go, right. Rick is my nickname.
The parents don't like you, named you Humpty.
Can you imagine that? And this is my son Humpty.
There's worse names than that. There's way worse than that. Humpty wouldn't be that bad compared to some of these names that people name their kids.
Yeah, you could make Humpty work. There are some names out there that are just like, yeah. Like he needs to go change his name.
Or if you just said your kid's name is like it's just symbols. Let's name our kid just symbols.
They won't even allow you to do that though.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't that what Elon Musk did?
Yes.
His kid is an equation.
Yeah. That's the name? But he's not anymore. He's not allowed to be an equation.
Oh, he's not? Okay.
No. Because how do you address
could be Gina
somebody
Tell.
Like that?
This is my son Gina Tell. Come on, Mom. You got to be better.
So bad.
You have
so
to be
bad.
Better.
But didn't they think that through, though? I mean, don't you run through
obviously
it like,
not.
Okay. Yeah, but that, I mean, come on. People spend, you know, tens of hundreds of hours thinking about their kids' names. You didn't think that Gina Tell would raise a red flag?
You can call me. My friends call me Privates.
Yeah. How about if it's Private Gina Tell? Join the Army, you can just be a disaster. They're terrible.
Well, how would it was Harry? Harry Gina
Tell. Oh, come on, man. Come on, man.
And there we go. There we go. Now, today on ESPN Daily, how did a Houston boxing trainer end up buried alive? Oh, God. Tisha Thompson tells a wild tale of attempted murder and staged death. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. This is quite the tease because I want to listen to this. How did a Houston boxing trainer end up being buried alive? That might be one of my greatest fears in life, Rick, being buried alive.
Not one of. I think that is, well, I mean, for me, it's Dolphins too, but I mean, to be buried alive. No, yeah, stop. I'm claustrophobic, dude. I couldn't have people jump. Like if we won a game and they jumped on me in like a pig pile, I would lose my mind.
How do you do on elevators?
Because I was so claustrophobic.
You fine on elevators?
I'm not bad on elevators.
How about
no,
if the elevator like, would stop?
Oh, I'd be done. Done.
That'd be big problems.
There'd be huge problems. Huge. I'd be trying to get out the top. I mean, what? No.
You just
my grandmother won't even go on elevators.
She walks?
Yeah, Ginny won't go on elevators. No, anywhere that has an elevator that she can't get upstairs, she won't go to.
Really?
Terrified.
That's a real
yeah,
phobia
we have, I mean,
then, huh?
Listen, my family's all screwed up, dude. Between Ginny and then
leave it
Mickey,
alone.
I mean, we got real issues. Now Ginny wants to move in with Mickey, which if I film, I'm telling you right now, you want the can't miss hit of the summer. It is if my grandmother moved in with Mickey and then we
filmed
it. They're
going to be looking for programming all these stations.
Dude, I am telling you right, it would be gold.
Now, how old is your grandma?
Ginny is 90.
Yeah, so at some point she's going to need some kind of assistance with living, right?
Well, she said, yeah, now she's ready because she's bored. Yeah, now she's ready because she's bored. But they would, oh my God. I mean, it would be the best thing you ever seen in your entire life.
Maybe second best thing to Andy and Merrick, who brings trivia strong every day. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, guys. It's the day after Memorial Day weekend. It should be baseball season, so I bring you some baseball trivia. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Chris, Andy had one for you on Friday. I handled it, and it counts for your record.
Well, thank you for that, Dave. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
I mean, I lean on you all the time with Andy's questions anyway, so I feel like it's only appropriate.
Always here for you.
All right, CC. So, from the decade of 2010s to 2019, which player led the major leagues in hits?
Ooh. In hits?
Very New York flavor to this.
A very New York flavor to hits. Huh.
Most hits from 2010 to 2019.
Yeah, that's any idea where we need to be going with this one, Dave?
Not really.
Very, very New York flavor to it.
I mean, it can't
very New York flavor.
Can't be Jeter.
Let's see. Could it be a Met?
Could have played with the Mets. Could have played with the Yankees. Could have played with both.
Could have played with
both.
Look
at you.
Did play with both.
2010 and 2019.
Oh, I think I do. Is he did the Mets acquire him in a horrendous trade?
Yes, they would. So right, they,
it's
all you.
So it would be one Robbie Cano.
There you go.
Don't you know?
Look at you, Andy.
I will say this though, one good thing to come out of the pandemic, the Mets could actually have a team built for the National League now with the DH.
Yeah.
There you go.
The DH is instituted, it would be good for the Mets.
Let's go saves with DiPietro. Who had the most saves from 2010 to 2019?
Save DiPietro. That was nice. That was well done.
Most saves in baseball from 2010 to 2019.
Yes, sir. How's that beard growing, Rick?
It's pretty. It's not that bad. Mustache is a little bit gross. Beard, I took care of a little bit. I got to do a video for the hockey team, so I don't know if what I have in my face right now is acceptable. So I think I'm going to have to shave it off.
Let them see the true you.
Nah, I don't. And then I got to do a virtual graduation on Wednesday. I'm one of the ring presenters for one of my seniors. I'm one of the ring. I was asked by one of the kids on my team, one of the seniors on my team, to be his senior ring presenter. So we're doing a Zoom ring presentation. So I have to be on Zoom, and I don't feel like this look I have going right now is really. Mm-hmm. The right way to represent myself.
All right, getting back to it. Most saves in the decade of
and the beard inquiry was a little bit of a hint.
The beard inquiry.
Ooh. Beard. I do like the beard.
Did he ever pitch for the Red Sox, Andy?
Dave, you are helping so well.
Mm-hmm. Craig Kimbrell?
Craig Kimbrell would be right.
And now I'm not going to know the one for me. I guarantee you.
Well, Dave, Craig Kimbrell had 346 saves over that decade. The home run leader had 346 homers. Can you name him?
Nelson Cruz.
Oh, that's too easy. Oh, my.
I am the smartest man alive!
All right, Dave, I'm going to double down with you.
Oh, here we go.
I love it.
Question.
That was nice.
A bonus question. Dave, who accumulated the most wins from 2010 to 2019?
Most wins? I'm thinking Scherzer.
Oh, my goodness.
Then I'll go with Scherzer.
You're ridiculous. Stay healthy, guys.
There we go. Good times, boys.
You're a machine, Dave. You're a machine. We're not human.
No, we all know that. No, we all know that. I mean, there's a certain part of Dave's brain that just doesn't work the right way. It shut itself off to accumulate more useless sports knowledge. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was trying to help. I was trying to help Alex with fourth grade math over the weekend. I was like, Shari, you got to have to tag in here. This is very complicated. But I can tell you that Nelson Cruz had the most home runs in the decade of the 2010s. Really? He gets so frustrated. He's like, Dad, I just don't know it. And I'm sitting there like, I have no idea what it is either.
Let's hope at some point one of their electives in high school or college is sports trivia, so you can be a help.
Yeah, that I'll be able to help. I'll be able to help.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.